Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. And soon, throughout the country, you will meet that same fine Lucky Strike tobacco in Lucky's smart new uniform.
It's half past eight. Half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Each week at this time, you play for war bonds and encyclopedias with four almost authorities. You provide the questions and our experts try to answer them. Remember, for every question used, Lucky Strike will give you not only $10 in war stamps, but a set of the 12-volume Britannica Junior Encyclopedia. If the question is muff, you get the Junior Britannica plus a $50 war bond plus a 24-volume set of the regular Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid. And all questions become the property of Information Team.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now light up a Lucky Strike as I present our master of ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you, Mr. Fadiman. Ladies and gentlemen, Information Please continues on its unrehearsed and spontaneous path, the spontaneity tonight being provided by the veteran trio, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams. Our guest tonight was to have been Ethel Vance, the novelist, but a sudden illness, not serious, we're glad to say, has made it impossible for her to be with us. And instead, we are very glad to welcome the famous novelist and distinguished public figure, Mr. Louis Bromfield. Now, we're going to begin with a question from Eleanor Prine of Oakland, California. This has to do with recent unusual acts that you may have read about in the papers. Tell me what each one is associated with, and let's get two out of three. The first act is the ringing of church bells. I have four hands. Mr. Bromfield.
Well, in England, the only time church bells are rung is a time of victory during war, and on account of the victory in North Africa, they've been ringing the church bells.
Yes.
To that time have been silent.
Yes.
That's wrong, Mr. Fadiman. They had reserved the ringing of bells for an invasion by Germany, and this was the first time they withdrew that order and to commemorate the victory in Egypt.
Yes, that is more nearly accurate, Mr.
It is accurate.
Mr. Bromfield. I stand corrected, Mr. Levant. It is accurate. But Mr. Bromfield gave us the right association, but he forgot to say that it was supposed to have been reserved for the conceivable invasion by the Germans. That's right. Now, what's associated with a light cruiser attack? A light cruiser attack. Mr. Levant.
Mr. Bronco can correct me now. This has to do with Guadalcanal.
Go ahead.
Is this the one where the San Francisco, the flagship, which the late heroic Callahan, Admiral Callahan...
Right-o.
...led with right into a battleship and blazed away at a superior ship with superior guns?
Yes. What was unusual about the formation of this battle? Mr. Kieran, want
to... Wasn't that the Boise you're talking about?
I beg pardon?
The Boise?
No,
if you arrived here today, it couldn't have been.
No, it couldn't have been. It couldn't have been outshipped. It was the most famous and recent victory of the Solomon Islands in
13th, 14th, and 15th of November.
Yes, our light cruisers went down. As you remember, a double lane of Japanese ships firing at either side of them and doing very darn well for themselves. That happened only was the date that when this occurred?
13th, 14th, 15th.
Yes, a 3-day battle. How about the unusual act of the renewal of a contract? The renewal of a contract recently has been in the news. Whose contract? In association with what?
Have we just picked up?
Pardon? Mr. Kieran? Mr. Kieran, you don't read the sports news?
Oh, we have DeRozan.
DeRozan. Oh, I gave it to you, though.
Yeah.
Yes. What's the story, Mr. Levant?
We all know the real story, except that he emerged after 55 hours and said he was signed and he wasn't supposed to gamble or swear or do anything anymore except be a leader of nine men.
Mr. Kieran, is there anything more to add to that story?
Tell you the truth, I wasn't even looking.
Don't know anything about Leo DeRozan.
I thought he was signed, and I'll let it go at that.
Well, he was signed as player-manager. Is there anything unusual about that, Mr. Kieran?
Well, he's getting on, and he'll have to reduce. But no, I don't know if that's three days. I have to read them.
It'll be tough to find ball players.
Pardon?
It'll be tough finding ball players.
But maybe then. Yes. All right, how about this one? From Jesse G. Ham of Columbia, South Carolina. We have to get these book titles of books of the last, year or two at the most. And the book title in each case is taken from a portion, the first one was taken from a portion of Polonius' farewell speech. Can you give us a book title, a novel, I think, Mr. Kieran?
This Above All.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. Who wrote it?
That I can't...
Eric Knight.
Eric Knight.
Oh, Adam, I should know that.
Well, that's all right. Mr. Eric Knight, who's been on this program, as a matter of fact. How do the lines go, Mr. Kieran?
This above all, to thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night the day, thou canst not then be false to any man.
Nice going. How about a recent book title taken from The Mikado? Taken from The Mikado. I get four dumb looks. Pardon?
You're a Jap, Mr. Sapp. You're a Sap, Mr.
That's not taken from The Mikado. Mr. Adams?
Oh.
It doesn't occur to you.
Who wrote it?
Adams.
In Old St. Merriman.
Yes.
Oh.
Adam, don't you read your own book?
Not for $3, I don't.
Mr. Levant?
He's waiting for the moving picture.
Hey, it ought to be very... It's a very good title for a moving picture, isn't it?
Yeah.
Innocent Merriman?
Cast it, will you?
Goldwyn should only be listening. How about a song by Jerome Kern?
What about
it? Recent book title was taken from it. Mr. Bromfield.
The Last Time I Saw Paris.
Yes, very good. Who wrote it?
Elliot Paul.
Elliot Paul. That's a good title out of three.
It was the reverse. The song was out before the book.
That's what I say.
Oh, I'm sorry. Then I'm in reverse.
You mean the book was out before the song?
No, you're wrong. The song was out long.
You mean I'm right? The song was out before the book. Mr. Paul took his title from the song.
Mr. Hammerstein's title, you said.
Mr. Hammerstein's, yeah. Well, that's what I said. Now, how about this one from Patterson Fourier of Pasadena, California? This is a musical question, a rather interesting one. It seems that painters and composers sometimes choose the same titles for their works. I want you to identify the pictorial artist who used the title associated with each of these selections. You're going to hear three of them. Now, a pictorial artist of one kind or another used the same title as the title of this work. Let's have the first. I have two hands. Mr. Levant, would you start us off?
Well, that's Arabesque of Debussy.
Yes, now you have to give us the name of the artist.
Mr. Whistler will do that.
Mr. Whistler. Is this a painting called Arabesque?
Quite so.
Can you describe it?
Well, that sounds like a ballet. The ballet man, Degas.
Did Arabesque?
I don't know.
It's Kitziger, the ballet.
I don't think so. Now, you may be right, yes, Mr. Bromfield. I am not guessing because I have the information here. How about another guess? Matisse. Matisse painted a picture called Arabesque. Are you familiar with it, Mr. Bromfield? What's happened to Matisse, anyway?
His son's on 57th Street.
Well, that helps. I'm getting nearer to him.
As a matter of fact, I think he's in southern France.
He is in southern France? How about the next one? I have two hands. Mr. Adams?
That is Barney Gogol and was done by the untimely, lately, Billy DeBeck.
Yes, the well-known cartoonist, Billy DeBeck. That's right.
Late.
Recently died. That's quite right. Mr. Levant, are you going to say anything to the contrary?
I was
going to
say it, that's all.
Well, I'm glad I called on Miss Adams. All right, now the third and last. Mr. Levant.
That's the Nocturne in E-flat of Chopin.
Yes, and what pictorial artist?
I don't know, Mr.
Garfield. Mr. Kieran?
Well, a series of nocturnes by James Abbott McNeil Whistler.
That's right. Mr. Bromfield, that would be right.
That would be right. Yes.
Well, we got two out of three on that. Now, how about this one from Mrs. L.M. Creel of Rochester, New York? What famous trial, all these trials took place since the advent of a well-known murderer named Schicklgruber, what famous trial was held in each of these cities? The first trial is Rion, R-I-O-N, Mr. Bromfield.
The trial of Villadier, Renault, Léon Blum, all of
Camelin.
Yes. What were they being tried for?
They were being tried for the responsibility of losing the war for France, that bad organization and bad production and so forth.
Yes.
War guilt.
Yes, a put-up job.
Actually, it turned into a boomerang, and Mr. Hitler was only too glad to call it off because Pétain turned out to be the one who was responsible more than anybody in France.
Yes.
You know why that was?
No.
He was a minister of war during 34 and so forth and forgot to prepare. But that forgetting, I think, is a peculiar act of...
Very peculiar, yeah. A bit of amnesia. How about a famous trial that took place in Washington? This was fairly recently, too. Mr. Curran?
The eight chaps who landed here on the submarine.
What did you call them?
Saboteurs, or proposed saboteurs.
Yes.
Who were sabotaged, six of them.
Yes.
At least successful.
What happened to them?
They were executed.
That's one of the happiest stories of a happy ending. I like them. Think of that. Yes, a famous trial down in Washington of the Nazi saboteur. Now, how about a famous trial in Berlin? There's two since Mr. Hitler. Mr. Adams?
One for the fire of the Reichstag.
Yes. Who was being tried?
Somebody who didn't do it.
Vander Lubbe and Georg Dimitrov.
Yes. And what happened to
Vander Lubbe got killed. He was supposed to be an idiotic Dutchman. Blabbering, blithering, blooming, you know, that kind.
Say, he can alliterate.
Well, I used to have an identification with Vander Lubbe as a joke. It worked out badly for me.
And how about Dimitrov?
Dimitrov became president of the Third International.
Exchanged, actually, with a Russian prisoner, a German prisoner, a Russian prisoner exchanged.
Yes, that's quite right. And that, too, like the Riom trial, Mr. Brownfield, was a put-up job on the part of the Nazis. Quite right. And that gets us three trials out of three. Three trials, no errors. Say, that's rather good. How about this one from Mrs. Ronald Brown of Cleveland Heights, Ohio? Can you identify these brothers who didn't show the proper fraternal spirit? In the first case, one brother slew the other in a quarrel over who should rule a newly founded city.
Romulus and Remus?
That a boy, Mr.
How did I know that?
I had no idea.
I think that's because I was in Cincinnati Wednesday and I was thinking of Cincinnati.
That's possible. I don't follow, but it might be. Which one slew the other?
Take your pick.
Now, you take a pick. Mr. Brownfield.
Romulus slew Remus,
yes. Now, how about one sort of sissy half-brother who always told on the other? Who was that? Always told tales about him, Mr. Kieran?
You mean a half-brother? Was it Tom Jones?
No.
Well, he was
the Tom part is all right.
The Iron Mask.
Yeah.
The Iron Mask told on the other boy.
Are they half-brothers?
Oh, that's the Mark Twain book.
Go ahead.
The Popper.
No, you're
Tom
wrong.
Tom Sawyer.
Oh, I don't know. What? I'm
Sid.
Tom
and Sid.
Tom and Sid, yes. I don't think I can give you full credit.
No.
Now, here is a case in which two brothers nearly lost their lives because they failed to take the precautions urged by a third. A third brother, that is.
They nearly lost their lives. I know two who did lose their lives.
That's better still.
Well, two of the three brothers in the King of the Golden River.
I don't know, sir.
Oh, you don't know that?
No. Do I have to resign, John?
Give us $50 war bond.
It used to be in McGuffey's Reader.
I've never read McGuffey's
Would
Reader.
Would it be the two famous Alexander brothers in England, one of the Admiralty, the other...
No.
Well, they almost lost their lives, and they were very courageous.
Well, the ones who almost lost their lives, I'm sure that Mr. Kieran is right about those who did lose their lives, but the ones who almost lost their lives, and that, after all, is a question, are the two little brother pigs in the Three Little Pigs. Remember? So I think that sends a $50 war bond to Mrs. Brown and a set of the encyclopedia. And now here's Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story of what makes a better cigarette can be told in just two words. Fine tobacco. For make no mistake, in a cigarette, it's the tobacco that counts. And smokers, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. At auctions all over the South, year after year, we consistently select and buy the riper, lighter, milder Lucky Strike leaf. No wonder that with independent experts, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. In choosing your own cigarette, take a tip from the experts. Remember, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. And soon, throughout the country, you will meet that same fine Lucky Strike tobacco in Lucky's smart new uniform.
Thank you, Mr. Rysdale and Mr. Cross. That took 58 seconds.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now a question from Mrs. H.P. Hubbard of Encinitas, California. Gentlemen, I'd like you to quote a line from each of these poets, I'll name them, a line that expresses admiration for some woman, any woman. The first is Shakespeare. Now, all you have to do is give me a line or two in which he expresses himself favorably about some gal or other. Mr. Kieran is the only one to... Mr. Kieran?
Well, who is Sylvia? What is she that all the swains adore her? That's the whole...
Yes, a whole lyric in praise of Sylvia. Very good one. Mr. Brownfield, you have another tip of your tongue?
No, I know Shakespeare.
Quotations always. Remember the famous one, age cannot wither her, nor custom stale her, infinite variety. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Now a line from Byron in praise of Mr. Brownfield.
It's a beautiful line. She walks in beauty like the night.
Yes, what's the next
one? A beautiful line of all time.
It is a lovely line, and the next one is almost as good.
And I can't tell you the next one.
Mr. Kieran.
Something, quiet.
Starry skies and cloudless climes.
Cloudless climes and starry skies.
And all that kind of dark and light meet in her aspect and her eyes.
Yes, it's a lovely quatrain. One of the best, as Mr. Brownfield says, that Byron ever wrote. How about Wordsworth, a line of praise of a woman from Wordsworth?
Oh.
Mr. Adams?
Woman in her hours of ease.
Mr. Kieran.
A perfect woman, nobly planned to warn, to comfort, and command. It's a whole poem. Those are the last two.
Yes, and she certainly sounds like a dull gal from that poem.
She was a phantom of delight when first she came to my sight, a lovely apparition, etc.
Thank you very much. Well, that gives us three gals out of three and sends us on to a question from Norman Dine, New York City. This is about insomnia. It's a musical question. Identify the victim of insomnia who is mentioned in each of these selections. This combines your two favorites, insomnia and music, Mr. Levan. You should be fair on this one. All right, let's have the first. Mr. Adams.
That is when you're lying awake with a dreadful headache.
That's right. Who says so?
The Lord Chancellor, I think, in my life.
That's perfect response, Mr. Adams. Very good. And now the second insomnia. I have both Mr. Brownfield and Mr. Levant. Mr. Levant?
This has a double intention. This song says, I want to fall asleep so I can dream about you, by Irving Berlin.
I'm getting tired so I can sleep.
That's right.
That's the way.
Right.
Want to
sing it, Mr. Brownfield?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll play a competition.
It's beautiful. Go ahead. It's Miss
from
the what? Army.
From Miss the Army, yes, the private sings it. And now the third and last. This is kind of tough one. I've got both Mr. Brownfield and Mr. LeBron.
Mr. Brownfield, it's a tough one. I'm not sure of it.
All right,
Mr.
Brownfield.
Sure. Go ahead.
I think I'm right. It's one of my favorites. It's one of the Goldberg variations by Bach.
That's right.
Flavor.
And they were written by Bach at the request of a rich man called Goldberg, who lived, I believe, in Dresden.
He's still rich.
To put him to sleep every night.
That's
and
nice.
And Bach wrote a whole suite, a whole series. They're very beautiful.
Yes.
They put me to sleep very often on my own telephone.
They put all audiences to sleep, and they don't play them very often.
Now, that's enough plugs on this program. Yes, that's a perfect response, Mr. Brownfield. It's exactly right. Is there anything to add to that, Mr. Brownfield?
It's very unusual for Mr. Brownfield to know that. I want to compliment him. It's a really very recondite piece.
Praise from Sir Oscar. All right. We did very well on that, gentlemen. Now, how about this one from Frank Shippey of Palo Alto, California? Oh, gee, Mr. Kieran, this is about birds.
Oh,
it says here common birds, too. I don't suppose you care to answer anything about a common bird.
Common birds? Is Abyssinia?
No, Abyssinia. What common bird has the following scientific name? I shall do my best with this Latin. Passer domesticus. Why, Mr. Adams. Yes, Mr. Adams.
The sparrow.
Very good. What kind of sparrow? Ordinarily known as?
Tame sparrow.
Yes, Mr. Sheeran?
Ordinarily called a house sparrow.
House sparrow.
It's the one that's imported from Europe to this country.
It's a southern fried type.
It's the one in Catullus.
Catullus? English sparrow in Catullus?
On the death of the sparrow.
I don't know whether that was the common or ordinary English sparrow that they had in Catullus. But maybe so. Now, the next one's a little hard. Here it is. The Planesticus migratorius. I get no hands but Mr. Kieran. Sure.
As a matter of fact, of course, that's the robin, but they change those.
Hey, they don't go so fast. What do you mean, of course, that's the robin? I don't know this.
Well, it used to be Muriel or Migratorio Migratorio.
Well, of course. Well, that's different now that you make it all clear. Yes, the robin. What does Planesticus Migratorius mean?
Well, Planesticus is the name of the genus, and Migratorius is just a migratory bird.
That's all. Planesticus means plain dweller. Migratorius, as Mr. Kieran tells us, means traveling around. Now, the second and the third and last is really a tough one. Melanertes erythrocephalus. Is that your hand shivering there, Mr. Adams?
How do you spell that first word?
Melanertes? M-E-L-A-N-E-R-P-E-S. Melanertes.
That stumps me.
Go on.
Is that a bat?
A bird? A common bird?
A bird, terribly common. Oh, pretty common. Let's stop you. How about erythrocephalus? Does that mean anything?
That's a red-headed something.
Mm-hmm. Now, what sort of a red... What
well, we have a red-headed woodpecker.
Keep quiet. That's enough. Red-headed woodpecker. Right. Perfect response, Mr. Kieran.
Well, we don't have the red-headed woodpecker common. In fact, it's quite uncommon east of the Hudson River.
I haven't run into one lately.
On this program, it's common, Mr. Kieran. Yes, the red-headed woodpecker. Well, that gives us 2 out of 3 with Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams. Good old English sparrow Adam coming through nobly. How about this one from Mrs. Fred H. Chapin of Upper Darby, Pennsylvania? Can you name a character in a play who fell in love with a weaver? A character who fell in love with a weaver? Oh, Mr. Kieran?
Titania in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
Bottom the Weaver.
Bottom the Weaver. How was he dressed at the time?
He was wearing a donkey's head over his own.
That's correct.
Very appropriate.
Finally showed his true face. And how about a character who fell in love with a sewer man? That's a tough one.
No, Seventh Heaven.
That's right.
That's easy. I saw it.
Oh, that's fine. Right. What were the names of the characters, remember?
There was a little boy in there. They called the Rat, and then Charles Farrell and Janet Gaynor. They were nice people. And then the sister. Remember the mean sister who used to beat her?
No.
You have no education.
No, I didn't see it at all. The name of the character was Dion.
That's right.
Who fell in love with Chico, Austin Strong's play, Seventh Heaven. Now, how about a character in a play who fell in love with an orange vendor? An orange vendor, Mr. Brumfield?
Charles Second is in the play, but he's a comedy. Charles Second and Nell Gwynn.
Yes.
Charles Second and Nell Gwynn. She was an orange vendor, and there's a musical show written by...
There's also a song called In Soda Bed, a book called In Soda Bed,
about
a play
yes.
In Soda Bed, yes. That Nell Gwynn was in as an orange man.
Yes, and what's the play called Sweet Nell of Old Drury?
I think so.
That yes, that was it. Well, that gives us 3 out of 3. And how about this from Mr. P. Kramer of Brooklyn, New York? What are these places that have appeared in the news recently? They sound somewhat alike, but they're spelled a little differently. The first is Buna, B-U-N-A. Now, take it easy, gentlemen. This is not going to be so easy. Mr. Kieran.
Buna is the Jap stronghold toward which the MacArthur forces are approaching, I hope.
You bet.
New Guinea. It's on the northern coast.
Yes. Is it in Papua?
Well, that's
part of New Guinea. That's right. Now, that's exactly right. Buna also is a name for a kind of synthetic rubber, isn't it?
Yeah, the Germans use it.
Germans use it. Right. Now, here's another name, a little like Buna, but it's spelled B-O-N-E, which is pronounced bone, I guess, Mr. Brumfield.
Well, bone is a port. It's a very small port on the North African coast in the Mediterranean.
Yes. In whose hands is it now, Mr.
Brumfield? I can handle
it. It is in our hands, on the northeast coast of Algeria. That's right. Now, the next is Buin, B-U-I-N, Mr. Levant.
That's in the Solomons.
That's so right.
Above Guadalcanal, north of it.
In whose hands is Buin now?
I'm afraid the Japanese.
So far, still in the hands of the Japanese on Bougainville, one of the Solomon Islands. Well, gentlemen, did very well on that. And now, before we go on to the next question, here's Mr. Cross and Mr. Rydersdale.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Ladies and gentlemen, when you step up to a cigarette counter, you have your choice of many different qualities of tobacco. In a very real sense, you're a tobacco buyer. And your enjoyment depends on selecting the finer, milder tobacco. Surely, then, it's worth your while to take a tip from the independent experts who spend their lives buying, selling, and handling the leaf. Sworn records show that with these experts, auctioneers, buyers, and warehousemen, the men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1. Smokers, to put it in a nutshell, Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. So round, so firm, so fully packed, so free and easy on the draw.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. And soon throughout the country, you will meet that same fine Lucky Strike tobacco in Lucky's smart new uniform.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. And Mr. Rivale, that took 60 seconds.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now a question from Conrad Fiorillo of New York. Now, gentlemen, suppose you had three rods. One was of copper, one was of glass, and one was of aluminum. And suppose you held them over a flame. Which would you be forced to drop first, second, and last? Obviously, it's a question of which conducts heat most quickly. Mr. Kieran?
I would say copper first, aluminum second, and glass last.
And you would be absolutely right, Mr. Kieran, if you did. Now, I have a question for Mrs. Bernice Wade of Kelowna, British Columbia. Can you name two works of literature by different authors in which there is a character named March?
Yeah.
Mr. Levant?
Green Hat.
And how about the other?
Frederick March.
He's not a work of literature.
I don't have time right now.
How about another one? Mr. Brownfield?
It's a book of George Eliot. I can't think of the name of it.
Middle March.
Pardon?
Middle
March. No, it is a book. Middle March? I should think it would be any of the March girls and little women. How about one, a character named Valentine appears in what works?
The police commissioner, Louis Valentine.
He's not a work of literature.
You mean Valentine?
Valentine, Mr. Kieran.
Sue Jacqueline of Verona.
Yes. And another one, Mr. Brownfield?
Faust.
Well, I'm afraid Faust is right. That's all we'll have time for, I guess.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
Thank you, Mr. Brownfield, for helping along with the fun this evening. Now, in a few seconds, I'll announce next week's guest. Tonight, Lucky Strike has paid out one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica and one $50 war bond. And speaking of bonds, may I address 60 words or so to our women listeners? From now on to the new year, you'll be hearing about the special drive on payroll savings. The idea is to get 30 million workers to invest 10% of their incomes in war bonds. And this can only be done if you women, who do a lot of the buying and the budgeting, help. That 10% is your hope chest for the future. It's an investment in your home and in your family. The home and the family the Germans have sworn to destroy. Now, next week, Mr. Kieran and Mr. Adams will occupy their usual seats. And our guest will be there'll be two guests, very distinguished people who ought to have something in common. One is the director of the Office of Price Administration, Mr. Leon Henderson. And as you know, Mr. Henderson worries a great deal about the nation's food. Well, so does our second guest, Mrs. Wilma Lord Perkins, because Mrs. Perkins is the present editor of one of the most famous books in the world, the Fanny Farmer Cookbook. Remember to send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, at 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
Lucky Strike Green has gone to war. Yes, Lucky Strike Green has gone to war.
And now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer from Goldsboro, North Carolina.